Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm well rested, back from vacation, ready to get after the new year. You and I haven't worked together in a while.
I know. It's been a while.
I don't know if we've ever worked together, but we haven't been with each other for a
right.
while.
I know. This is the first show in, what, 3 weeks?
I know. But I've had a good time. I'm feeling refreshed. My tan's about gone, but I'm ready to get after it this year.
Cool. So who are we kicking off the year with?
We are going to be visiting with the winners, the recipients of the awards from the 9th Annual Spirit of Endeavor Awards Banquet that we did that remote broadcast at.
Yes, that was a great event.
That was fun. And remember, I got to be the, do you remember what they called it?
I believe you are called, I know you're called this here, I think there as well, the voice of God.
And that was fun stuff. And the food was good, and it was good company. A little bit later in the program, in fact, we're going to hear from Brigadier General Stuart Roadheaver, who has been in the studio before. We had him on the show before that event, so it'll be interesting to catch up with him, find out what's new, and find out what it's like to be a winner. And we're also going to get a chance to visit with the CEO of Secure Experts, Mr. Darnell Washington. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce from an organization called OFS, Mrs. E. Soon and Mr. Robert Lingle. Welcome to the show, gang.
Oh, well, thank you. We're glad to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Robert, I guess we'll start with you if we could. Give us a little bit of an overview of OFS and what you guys are out there doing for folks.
All right. Well, it's great to be here this morning. OFS is actually one of the founding members of the high-tech community in Atlanta. We're the fiber optics business, formerly of Lucent Technologies and AT&T and Western Electric. Today, we are owned by Furukawa Electric of Japan, which is a diversified manufacturing company with a very long history of manufacturing and communications in Japan. And our lineage really goes back through Bell Labs all the way to Alexander Graham Bell in 1876.
That's a pretty strong heritage.
Yeah, pretty good. So now, what do you guys do? Were you with them when they were part of the Bell system? Or you came after that?
E and I both joined when OFS was part of Lucent Technologies back in the late 90s. And so we were part of that era when things were going full guns and the fiber optics industry was exploding. And we've also been through the contraction when the IT bust occurred.
So for people like Lee who just don't understand this fiber optic technology, explain that to him a little bit. What is that and how is it different from the way things were when we were kids?
Well, when we were kids, the only thing we had to send communication signals through was copper wire, and that was...
And pigeons.
And pigeons, yes, depending on how old you are. But today, really, all of the Internet, long-distance communications, is sent over glass wires by signals of light. A lot of people believe that the Internet goes on satellite. That's definitely not true. It goes on glass wires, fiber optic cables that are run under the ocean and across the country, and more today in data centers and even to people's houses.
Now, are there a lot of these wires around?
Yes, we would like for there to be more. We think that companies like AT&T and Verizon and the cable companies should be installing fiber to people's homes, and that's kind of beginning. Verizon's taken the lead on that, but... I mean, there's still a lot of room for investment in that area to.
So, like, cable companies aren't using fiber optics; they're using actual metal cables.
Well, cable companies use coax to your house. They generally run fiber into the neighborhood these days, but it's coming.
And E, tell us a little bit about your role at OFS. What's your job there?
My job title is research engineer. I'm responsible for the Enterprise LAN Lab. So basically, I do some designing of optical fiber, mostly multimodal optical fiber, and major focus is on system testing, evaluate new fibers, and find their interesting point of system applications.
Now, you were a key component of this mentoring program, is that right?
Yes, I'm one of the mentors.
Yeah, so can you talk a little bit about that?
The mentor program is a partner with TAG, Summer collaboration education program.
Right.
It was brought by human resource head of OFS, Stephanie Strait, and with full support from our management team and our colleagues.
So you were able to get a kid, right, a college student? Is that right?
It's not a college student. Actually, it's high school student.
Wow. Yeah. So were there a lot of high school students vying to be an intern at your, or to be mentored by OFS?
Yes, there are some. We interviewed quite some.
A lot of them? And then
Actually, Robert Lincoln knows more about the interview process.
Okay, so do you want to talk about how that went about and how a person could apply to that?
Yeah. The Technology Association of Georgia has this program, and I know they have a website that I think you can point people to. But they had a couple of hundred, I think, students who were signed up this year for that.
Right.
And we interviewed a number, and we interviewed them on various categories. And if companies are interested in that program, I'd recommend, you know, you interview a broad range of these students. You can get great GPAs, but then you get students like one that we actually brought in who had in his resume, I am going to be the first student in my family to go to college.
Oh, wow.
And when we saw that resume, we said, that's a guy that we want to interview. We want to talk to him because that's somebody that we'd be interested in helping.
Right.
So it was pretty exciting
to see.
So
you didn't go straight, or what? Did they have a good GPA too? Or
his GPA was fine, you know, but you had these people who were the top in their class at the biggest high schools in Atlanta, and then you had others, you know, who you could tell were really hungry to achieve something in life. And when you see those kind of resumes, you know, you're attracted to that kind of student.
Oh, sure. So tell us a little bit about the relationship with OFS and TAG, Technology Association of Georgia. What's that like? What's the purpose of that relationship, and what kind of benefits do you feel like you're getting from that?
Well, I think from OFS's point of view, corporate social responsibility is a very big part of our place in the community at all of our U.S. locations, whether it's in Massachusetts, in Avon, Connecticut, in Carrollton, Georgia, here, Somerset, New Jersey. TAG is a way for us to be involved in education as one of the kind of the focus points of our social responsibility. And this was our first year to be involved and take interns. We are going to be involved again next year. Their staff was very, very helpful. And next year we want to expand beyond just engineering or technology kind of students and also have kids in who are interested in business experience.
Oh, wow. So then it'll be broader. So then you can't have the high GPA for them. You know. You better go way down for the marketing kid.
That's not the kind of guys that go into the radio.
Well, you'll find that people with marketing degrees, and I speak with some degree of experience and wisdom in this, are pretty good at shooting pool, playing ping pong, things
of
that nature.
Softer skills.
Exactly.
Softer skills. Now, so the mentoring thing, I guess I would assume based on what you're saying, is it exceeded your expectation.
Yes, it did. And I think, E had a great experience with her student. E, I don't know if you want to...
Yeah, what was the name of your student?
His name is Anish Narayana.
And then, did he win something at the Endeavor? Was that...
Yes, he won the Spirit Endeavor Award.
For the best intern?
For the workforce readiness.
Right. So, now, can you take us through what was a day in his life like working with you? Because you seem real tough. You're real tough.
Yeah, I thought she was the Brigadier General, and then I was confused, but I got that straight now.
A typical day was like this. He came in the morning.
Did he get your coffee? He brought you coffee?
He came in the morning, either with my colleague Alan or with his mother. Then he stopped by my office and asked me what he could help at that day.
Right.
Or communicating with me. The progress of his project, his assignment.
Right.
If I came sometime a slide later than he did, I would find him in his office or lab and get a quick update. The assignment I gave him were exactly what I would have done without intern's help so that he could experience a real daily life of
right.
a research engineer.
So you didn't give him busy work. You didn't make up some side project that would never see the light of day. This was real work that had to be
real
done.
Real work, right. What I would have done without his
right.
Help.
And one of the things that he did was to introduce him to the work, show him the tools that he could use to work on it, and then go let him see what he could do with it. She really did not hold his hand and baby him. She really challenged him to go see what he could accomplish.
So now, does that scare you a little bit that you can have high school people doing what PhDs and stuff can do?
No, actually, I'm happy he can do that. You know, actually, when I look at the student, I'm thinking about what make me feel fulfilled or content is not what is not how much I know better than he now, but actually is when he reached my age, how much he could accomplish more than I do today.
Right. So when you were his age, could you think you could have done what he did?
It was very different. I didn't have the opportunity.
Right. So you think this is a good opportunity to kind of get younger people involved in this kind of company work at this young of an age? Because what he what the kid was, what, 17 years old? So
I didn't ask his age, but he didn't he couldn't drive by himself now. So.
So that's great.
Well, I unloaded peat moss for $2 an hour when I was 17, exactly. So slightly different background.
Were there fiber optics tying the peat moss?
Exactly. So I think maybe this young man has a little better earning capacity than I did when I came out. So what was the process like competing for this award? Walk us through that a little bit. That must have been interesting.
Does every intern get nominated? Or do you call them interns? What do you call them, mentees? What's the...
You call him Mr. Denise or whatever
right.
I think there was a nomination. I mean, the people who participated had the opportunity and the students to submit their project and write it up. And is that?
Yes. There's a call for application, I guess. Maybe that's the way to say it. And then the student write up what he feels.
What they accomplished.
Accomplished. And
what was the length of time that they was working there?
The length of time for the internship was 5 weeks.
Oh, it was 5 weeks?
5 weeks.
And I have to say, as a research manager, I was amazed at how much work he got done in 5 weeks.
Right.
The guy hit the ground running. He supported him, but a lot of work was accomplished. And I think there were about 10 or 12 applications for the award, projects that really had produced something, and it was stiff competition. And but you could just see how good this is for Atlanta area as a whole. There was one student even from Alabama who begged TAG to let him please find him a job in the Atlanta area, because there was just nothing like this
in Alabama,
in the eastern side of Alabama, where he lived in the boonies. And that we actually were able to hook him up with our facility in Carrollton, Georgia, and it was a kid who worked there. And he was so happy that the commute from, you know, from over in Alabama was just a delight for him to make, because he got this opportunity. I mean, the students were so overjoyed to be getting these experiences. And so it's a great thing for Metro Atlanta and the high-tech community here to have this program.
Well, and you guys are to be applauded for doing that and reaching out to support the community. I think that's terrific. So what can you share with us about the horizon for this kind of technology that you're allowed to share with us? Because I'm sure there's a lot of secret. My vision is that these guys are in the lab, you know, under all this secret protective stuff. But there must be some neat stuff coming down the pike that it's okay to talk about, yeah?
Sure, and obviously we have a huge collection of patents from the Bell Labs days, and we continue to add to that very actively. And I was talking with some of the other guys here that are on the program today about the technologies that are exciting right now. The two things that we think are very exciting, three. One is in fiber to the home, and the fact that you can now take optical fiber and you can handle it like copper. You can staple it to the wall in the right kind of cordage, in the right fiber. Not all fiber, but we have developed fibers that you can staple to the wall now and treat just like the cable guy who would come in, you know, and use a stapler and staple it to the wall. On the far distant end of that are submarine fibers, and we're developing new submarine fibers which are going to allow 100 and 400 gigabits per second to be transmitted across the ocean from California to China, California to Japan. And in data centers, fiber is really replacing copper in data centers, very high bandwidth multimode fibers with VCSELs, and that's in fact what E's student was working on, the coupling of VCSELs to multimode fiber, and the replacing of copper with fiber in data centers is going to reduce power consumption in data centers, as well as reduce cost in these very large data centers and supercomputers. And so these are very exciting applications for fiber optics. And OFS is in, you know, works very hard to stay in the forefront of that, going back again to that lineage with Bell Labs and back to Alexander Graham Bell.
Are there hubs throughout the country that the speeds of the internet, like, run faster than other places? Because I hear a lot that the United States is much slower than other countries, that there's other countries that just moves like lightning, and here we're kind of in the dark ages compared to them. Is that accurate?
You know, I think it breaks down by geography. Obviously, people in rural areas, you know, have a need to have more fiber closer to the rural area. That's an important need. Maybe those are underserved. Obviously, people are aware that Verizon in some parts of the country has rolled out the Fios program, where they do bring fiber all the way to the home. Cable companies are able to do a lot right now, but the next generation, really, people are going to need fiber to their houses.
And it's only going to get faster, right? Exchange is only going to get faster.
But we need the fiber to make it faster, right? We can't be as fast as with fiber than we are the way cable is, right? We can't be tied to cable if we want speed.
Yeah, I mean, again, DOCSIS 3.0 modems right now with cable can do a pretty good job. But, you know, as time marches on and there's more video and there's holography coming and 3D and all of those things, and some of the applications the guys here that are going to be on this program after are going to talk about are going to drive very large transfers of data, and fiber is going to be the only thing that can keep up as time goes on.
Okay, so this is going to be a goofy, uneducated question, but we have those from time to time, particularly on the High Velocity Radio Show. My vision of this whole thing, the way that it's mapped out in my mind, is like the Hot Wheel track. And the car starts to slow down, but then there used to be in the Hot Wheel track that we had at my house this little battery-operated gizmo, like these wheels, like a pitching machine, and when the car hit it, it would take it and it would throw it and it would speed it up again. Are there hubs like that along this internet stuff where things are moving kind of slow and then it gets to a certain point and then boom, it bursts and then it slows back down? Is it?
My goodness, that marketing education you got has engendered great creativity. And I think we need to go home and work on that concept and see if we can come up with a patent on that.
So it doesn't work like that.
So I guess the short answer is no, Stone. It doesn't stick to your day job.
But I think I could take some of what happens and map it over to your analogy. It might take a minute, though, to be able to do that.
It would take a PhD to make it match my thing.
Or a high school kid, one or the other.
Right, right. Well, it has been an absolute delight having you guys on the show. Congratulations to you for what a fabulous job you must have done in mentoring this young man.
And you're going to be doing more mentoring, right? That wasn't one and done. You're going to do that again?
It's just a start.
Just a start. So you think that because of how well it went, you think more and more companies are going to get into this mentoring thing?
Yes. Even just at the award banquet, there were several companies coming to tag the director, Mike Robinson, asking for opportunities.
Okay. So then, and you know that there was more kids there that wanted this opportunity. There just weren't enough opportunities.
Yes.
And all right.
Put them on that Hot Wheel project.
Exactly.
Call me after the show. We'll talk. Hey, listen, before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners or any students that might be interested in talking with you guys, what's the best way to reach out and learn more about mentoring program or learn more about OFS?
Well, certainly our website is www.ofsoptics. You can think of like Optical Fiber Solutions, ofsoptics.com. Certainly, I'd be happy to send me an email at rlingle@ofsoptics.com, and we'd be happy to put them in contact with the right people to look at this opportunity next year.
Terrific. Hey, listen, can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Yeah, we'd love to.
Terrific. Well, did you learn anything out of that interview, Lee?
Yes, that there's a lot of smarter high school kids than when I was in high school.
Yes, I believe so. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is a return guest, a gentleman we've had in the studio before, Brigadier General Stuart Roadheaver. Welcome back to the show, man.
Well, thank you very much. It's good to see you both. Happy New Year to you both.
And we didn't scare you away last time?
Didn't scare me away last time.
Come back.
So I did come back.
So what's new, other than the fact that you won this prestigious award?
Yeah, you were just a nominee back in the day when you came here before.
Well, that's right. We were a nominee the first time, and we were very, very blessed and lucky to, at the awards banquet, to come away with a couple of awards. And it's been a, first, it was a real honor. I mean, I was really surprised that the Technology Association recognized us, but very pleased because my employees do a terrific job and they deserved the recognition. So we were very, very happy about it.
So what did they have to say? Did they know right off the bat? Were they listening in? Were they all there? Did you get to come back with the ticker tape parade? How did that piece work?
Well,
did it say mission accomplished?
That's right. We just said mission accomplished, moved on to the next thing. No, we actually had half of the employees. We're a very small company. We have a dozen employees right now. But we had half of the employees there, and the other half were working on projects. So the ones who were there, by the time we won the awards, had already done the text and picture and sent things. And very quickly, the other employees knew, and they were all cheering, too. So we were all very, very pleased.
Now, did you do anything to celebrate?
We did. We had a Christmas celebration. We did some things to reward them for hard work and to kind of give them an initiative to make 2012 an even better year.
Now, why don't you educate our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with what you guys are up to?
We create 3D and virtual, completely interactive programs, and we do it for Department of Defense. We do it for some Fortune 500 companies, and we also do it for schools. And by that, what I mean is we design our 3D systems so that you can interact with them with just your hands. So we can build a computer and put it in the air, or we can build a machine, put it in the air. You can reach up and push the button, and then the machine will actually turn on. In schools, we developed over 1,000 lessons in chemistry, biology, physics, anatomy, math, automotive technician, aviation technician, and several other things. And you can dissect everything from a frog to a Tyrannosaurus Rex in a classroom by using your hands. The teacher can turn it, can manipulate it, and you can take it apart just by using your hands in the classroom.
Now, so your 3D is a little different than the 3D that I saw when I watched you go right in the theater.
Yeah, it's a little different. Actually, the when an image comes out of the screen, it's called holoprojection 3D, and the scientist who invented that is my chief scientist. His name is Dr. Carol Lastinger.
The inventor of the thing is on your payroll?
He is.
That's handy.
He is, yeah. He's
no
a,
wonder you won the award. Well,
that's kind of an unfair advantage.
Well, it's a little bit of unfair, but you know, when you start a small business, you go surround yourself with smart people. And somebody the other day asked me, said, well, how does it feel to go to work in a company like that that's just such a high-tech company? And I said, well, it feels bad to go to work every day knowing you're the dumbest guy in the building. But Dr. Carol and his team do a terrific job. And what we've been able to do is instead of having a 3D image that is like a hologram that's light that you can see through and because of that don't learn as much from, we create objects that look very, very solid in the air. And again, you can walk up to them, you can operate them, you can make the machine so that if you're trying to teach someone how to run a machine, if they don't do it properly, it will not run. And so it's a very interactive process.
So can you have it so that if they touch it and it's broken, like they can get actually hurt?
No, we don't want anybody to get hurt. But
that'll teach them.
That will, right? It would. That would teach them. That's called negative training. We don't want to do that.
No negative training.
But you can make it bark or something, couldn't you?
Well, one of the things we've done as a test for Southern Company, Georgia Power Company, is we're teaching some of their linemen how to install equipment and how to hook up wires. And if they hook up wires the wrong way,
they get a shock.
They don't get shocked, no, but we made an electrical flash come on in the air so that they can see that it was wrong.
Okay, that's your idea of negative, to startle them a little?
Well, you know, we started to use the cattle prod theory, but we backed away from that. So
what exactly did you win? What was the category or the award that you came away with?
Well, actually, we came away with two. We're very lucky. We won the Coolest Technology Company Award, and then I very fortunately won the Technology Entrepreneur of the Year Award.
Wow. Twofer.
So, yeah, we're a twofer there.
So next year you're going for the hat trick, right?
Next year we're going for the hat trick, so you guys better get ready. That's right. So
now part of your thing is helping teenagers learn, right? That's an important component moving forward.
It absolutely is.
You coined a phrase called screenagers. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Well, what kind of the way I backed into this company was as I was getting ready to retire from the Army, I was trying to help the Army find a better way to teach the millennium generation children, because that's who the Army recruits from, the millennium generation children. So I wrote a paper for the Army, which will, as I told y'all before, you write something down for the Army, it'll always get you in trouble because they always they always either ask you to do something about it then or put you to work. But I wrote a paper called Screenagers and said that basically the millennium generation is a three-screen generation. They learn off of a cell phone or a smartphone, a laptop, and a television, and we needed to reach them on those three screens if we wanted to train them the way that they were being trained every day. And from that, we started developing no paper classrooms. We're doing away with books. We're helping helping get rid of some of the books in classrooms. We're doing some very, very interactive things for some of the schools here in Georgia. And a matter of fact, a couple of them have liked what we're doing so much, they've started 3D clubs within their schools so we can help them learn how to make their own 3D their imaging. We're teaching them how to take the 3D imaging and how to process it and put it into our machines so they can see it in the classroom.
Are they enjoying it from like a gaming perspective or just the cool factor of making something appear 3D on a screen?
It's not necessarily the gaming factor. It's more the cool factor of being able to take a picture of something in 3D and immediately put it into our machine and show it on any wall or any classroom. So one of the schools, for instance, had a teacher that they thought was just very, very good at a particular science experiment. So we furnished them a 3D camera. The teacher did the experiment. The students filmed it. We took it and put it in our machine, and we were able to play it back for them. So if there comes a time when that teacher can't be there, then this can be shown to the students so they get the benefit of that person who was very good at that particular thing doing it instead of someone else coming in who may not be as familiar with the topic. So we can kind of help give you the Class A pitch from a teacher every time.
Teachers must eat this up. They must or do you find that some of the old school is a little bit threatened by it? Do you get some resistance sometimes?
Honestly, we've had a little bit of both. When we first started showing it, one of the things, and you have to know, I'm married to a retired teacher who spent 32 years in a classroom, so I get this firsthand. teachers are overworked. I mean, they are very, very overworked and overwhelmed, and they have all they can do with training students and maintaining their classrooms. So to ask them to learn how to run another piece of equipment is something very strenuous for them to do. So what we tried to do is make it very effective, very easy. So they have to push one button, and our system will turn the whole room into a 3D classroom. And then once we got them to understand that that's what we were doing, then most every teacher that we've shown it to has jumped on board. We've had a few initially that said, I'm not sure I want this in my classroom. But after we showed them how to use it and showed them that we've been studied by NASA, the National Science Foundation, Boeing, and Texas Instruments, and all of them have given us paperwork saying we're raising classroom scores by over 33% by using this 3D technique, they've all jumped on board.
They can't ignore it anymore.
They can't ignore it anymore when we say, okay, we're going to help you, and we're going to help you raise your classroom scores, and the students are going to enjoy it.
Right, and they're going to be more engaged, and they're going to, you know, like coming to school a little bit more.
That's right. And it's been very – one of the things that, you know, being a small company, we're just now starting to grow, so we're, you know, small companies don't make a whole lot of money to start with. But the things that you bank on are things like right now we have had students write – the superintendent of the county and say, thank you for buying this piece of equipment. I now understand what I did not understand before. I mean, that's pretty good. I mean, that's a good testimonial for us.
Can't get a better testimonial than that.
That's exactly right. We've done that now in several counties, so we're very, very proud of our systems.
Now, I would suspect that the upfront investment in something like this is going to be fairly substantial beyond what traditional learning materials from the past might be, but I would think there would be some real economies of scale over time that over time, it would actually be less expensive to educate people with this technology. Is that accurate?
That is accurate because the upfront technology for the 3D is not expensive at all. Now, if you decide to go with a full electronic classroom, then you have to furnish the student with something to put the textbooks into, either an iPad, a Droid system, or some notebook or netbook system to hold the textbooks.
We'll get the fiber optic folks to sponsor
that.
Don't worry about that. I got that covered.
But once a school system does that, then instead of having to buy a textbook every year, then they can just update the equipment that they've got, and it's a third of the price, and very drastically can drop what they're costing the system every year.
Now, it seems like the pricing on all that stuff is getting lower and lower.
The pricing on the electronics, such as tablets and all, is getting very, very reasonable. And again, by doing that, we've had school systems come to us and say, hey, we have technology money. We didn't really know what to do with it. Can you help us do this? And we've even had organizations we've had a Rotary Club come to us and say, I really like what you're doing. We want to purchase your system and put it into a school. And because they are very big into literacy, and trying to help in the school systems. And this is all part of that mentor program, which is a big thing within the Rotary Club. And I myself have been a mentor to three different children, and I think I applaud your company for doing that. OFS is very, very much a leader in doing that, and we appreciate what you did there.
Now, when you go into a school, can you pilot this in one class, or is it kind of an all or nothing? You got to get it in the whole school to be fair to everybody, or can you just get into like just the science?
You can. There's a whole bunch of different ways you can do it. We've had schools that say, you know, I'm not really sure if 3D is just a gimmick yet, or if they're really going to learn more. So I want to buy one machine, and do it as a pilot program. And we've done that with schools. But every school that we've done that in so far has come back to us now and bought multiple systems. One of the schools in South Georgia bought three systems to start with, and the superintendent called me about 3 months later, and he said, "I've created a monster down here. My teachers are fighting over these things." He said, "I'd like to buy some," and they've bought now eight more systems.
Is a system a class? Is that what that?
No, a system is a machine, and all the libraries that go along with it. And the machines are portable. You can roll them from classroom to classroom. So what they typically do is they'll put them in either a wing of the school or in the IT system or in the library, and teachers check them out for their classes. And by doing that, you can have one machine and cover multiple classes. But again, what happens typically is they buy one, and then very quickly they come back and they bought more, which is, you know, kind of what we wanted to do. So,
well, you must be the belle of the ball at trade shows and stuff. Do you go to like military trade shows or education trade shows and show this stuff off? You must, yeah.
We do, and you know, it's there's all kind of gimmicks, and there's a lot of different things at these, especially at military trade shows. There's a lot of cool stuff there, but we actually can. Stop traffic at our booth if we put 3D up on a 42-inch screen with no glasses that you don't have to wear and run some of the military programs we're doing. That's called auto-stereoscopic, but if we do that, we've had groups congregate at our booth and just enjoy it.
And that works better than the keychains?
Works a little better than the keychains. But I tell you, one of the best things for us that happens is the soldiers who are walking around will see this. They'll tell their families who are with them. They'll say, "You ought to go see that 3D," and the families are, you know, business people, school teachers, whatever, they come see us and they see what we're doing. And then the next thing we know, we get a call from them and say, "Hey, I was at the Army Aviation Show with you last week, and I'm a school teacher in Huntsville, Alabama. Can you come do a demo for our school system?" And then then we sell systems to them.
Right. So
it's been very good for us.
You start like a green room just for the families.
That's
you
right.
You put it in the main center.
That's right. We just want we get the soldiers to come through and right. Say, "That's cool," and go on. But then the families come in and actually get us the business.
So what's next for you guys? You've got the technology. Is most of your thrust this year the marketing, getting the word out?
Well, two things. We're doing a lot of marketing this year to get the word out. We have several big products that are doing well, and we're growing them, but we're also working on a couple of you know, we don't want to walk away with these things next year and not win the award again. So we have a very, very good R&D project going in the augmented reality world, and we think it's going to be it'll be a contender next year. So,
well, now Lee has ready. Experience with augmented reality. You guys
ought
to talk
about my normal reality
show.
Is augmented. So that works perfect.
Well, that's what we're doing. We're trying to maintain the edge, but grow our business at the same time.
Well, please do share your contact info so that educators and anyone else who ought to be looking at this technology can have a substantive conversation with you about it, man.
I will, and thank you. Thank you very much for that. Our webpage is www.visitechusa.com. Visitech is VIZITECHUSA.com. Or if you want to get me directly, my initials are CSR, and it's just CSR@visitechusa.com.
Well, General, thanks for coming back and visiting with us, man. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I didn't even want you to think I was just one time and y'all run me off. So it was a great pleasure, and I very much appreciate both shows that I've done with you and all of what you work to do to support the Technology Association.
Well, we're delighted to have you. Hey, you going to hang with us while we visit with our last guest this morning?
Absolutely. I want to learn more about what they do.
Terrific. Well, bringing the show home today is the Grand Poobah, President and CEO of Secure Experts, Mr. Darnell Washington. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you for having me today. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, and I know you really wanted to be here because you shared with us. You drove up from Orlando this morning?
That's correct. We were basically working on a project at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center, and after which I drove in the early morning, but I thought that it was an honor to be blessed to have the opportunity to work with such an esteemed crew, including your radio station. So it was one of those had to be here kind of things.
So he was listening to the Dale Carnegie tapes on
exactly.
The way.
Sounds good. Now, you want to tell us a little bit about Secure Experts and what your background is?
Sure. Secure Experts is a 10-year-old company. We specialize in cybersecurity and information security solutions. We work with what we would call higher-level security projects that sometimes involve sophisticated boutique custom security solutions. Quite often we work with organizations that have higher risks, such as financial institutions, healthcare institutions, and government-owned organizations who have federal contracts that have mandated requirements for information security and information protection. But we also support organizations who have the highest level of confidentiality and identity assurance to make sure that they don't get breached.
So what is new in the security that you're allowed to talk about? That what is new in your world? Is there some cool new technology coming down the pike that maybe the Lee doesn't know about yet?
Well, I wouldn't say that there's new technologies, but there's new threats that have to be dealt with in new ways. The most important thing that happens in the cybersecurity world is that the commonplace is that it's not the outside that you usually have to worry about from an information security perspective.
Uh-huh.
It's the insider threat that needs to be carefully monitored. And it's not only threats that are caused by people who intentionally do things that are malicious, but it's done by people who misconfigure systems or they have not been trained appropriately in cybersecurity awareness and policies. And they kind of open the door for the bad guy to get in.
So is the bad guy like just always poking around to see where there's a weak spot?
Yes. From the inside, what you're looking at is there's different levels, and we've had a great significant amount of studies that we've done, and you have what they call the Good Samaritans, the people who want to test the system to make sure that it's secure.
Like they're not really with your company. And
that's correct. They want to go ahead and see if something that they've downloaded from the internet will work to try to find a flaw in your system.
So they're doing it because they want to see, like, look how smart I am. I broke into this database or something.
That's correct. And internally, what you're looking at is that IT individuals are of a special breed nowadays where their level of intellect is achieving new massive scales. And this causes an area which is known as the Machiavellians, the ones who want to be able to prove to the other people that they're a little smarter than you and they can do things to defeat their IT security wherewithal.
This is the guy that came in second place at this thing, and now right. He's not happy, and he's going to go show the world, right?
Absolutely.
So they'll do something it'll be obvious to the world that they broke in there and say, did you see that? That was me.
That's correct. Well, what we're seeing is we're seeing groups and organized hacking groups and teams similar to your old clubs. Now, cyber sophistication has evolved to the point that not only are there organized clubs, but there are actually some law enforcement sensitive kind of information. But I think it's good and it's clear for me to say that a lot of your former gang affiliations are now recruiting actually cybersecurity individuals because online theft versus the holdups and robberies, this is the new age and this is the new landscape.
So they've kind of graduated from liquor stores into the back end of financial companies?
Most definitely, because the whole purpose and the methodology as far as what lures people into gang affiliation in the past was their social economic conditions, and we're dealing with depressed economies, and you're talking about people who at one point in time were lost, but now that they can find associations, which are largely due through social media recruiting and other areas that you can reach cybersecurity, credit card fraud, and people who can produce the organized approach where you have your actors that are online, but eventually there is financial gain in the proliferation of data and breaching of computer
systems.
So
they take the data and then they, well, like if it's credit card, they can actually get money, cash from that? Or do they get the data and then blackmail the company to give it back to them? Or how does that work?
Yeah, there's a myriad of different things. The most important one that cybersecurity and corporations worry about is what's known as spear phishing, where it's where they can capture accounts of large groups of contingencies, such as account holders from Macy's or other kinds of large organizations.
Right.
And then they take these cards and then they resell them on the internet through bidding and online bidding. And what happens is once these credit cards are exposed, the amount of identity theft that occurs after they are exposed is staggering.
Godfather 4 is going to be amazing. It's going to have like Sheldon and those guys from what is that show with all the geeks?
Or, the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, the Big Bang Theory. That's what Godfather 4 is going to be like.
A bunch of nerds and their iMac rank computers.
Yeah, well, the things as far as when you're dealing with certain movies, the capabilities that we were talking about with OFS and the Visitech, the kinds of technologies, what's happening is that the bandwidth that's been created and the massive computing power that they have is of concern from a security perspective, because if someone was to have a corporate database, it would only take seconds, whereas it would take hours or minutes to download complete.
So it's a double-edged sword, access to that much bandwidth?
Well, yes. It also creates the ability for what's known as brute force cracking, which means that people are able to eliminate and to guess passwords through permutations of what's the username and the login script. So one of the major focuses that our organization focuses on is the removal of usernames and passwords from computer systems to make sure that we're embedding multi-factor smart cards and other kinds of biometric logins to prove and have a higher degree of identity assertion to make sure that the people who are the actors on the
really
other side.
The actors, right.
Yeah, you got to remove the anonymity from the internet, and that's the only way we're going to be able to protect our infrastructures. And that is, it's not anything new. It's just the requirement now to enforce these things at a brand new level.
So you're saying like to have like an eye print or a fingerprint in order to access data?
Yeah, that's just the beginning. There's a number of biometrics.
Blood. I'm going to get blood.
Yes, they haven't gotten to the blood.
DNA.
But even the way that people type and move mice on a computer screen all create biometric fingerprints that can be matched and mapped to different kinds of characteristics. Mm-hmm. No one types the same, and no one does mouse movements in particular patterns. So what we're doing is we're developing a brand new mechanism of being able to assure that if someone is not who that they say that they are, there are abilities to detect them in advance of them being able to proliferate into.
So you're saying, like, if my password is the word password, which I'm sure a lot of people's password is that word, which, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So it wouldn't matter if they knew my I would type in password. It's how I type in password is what your thing's going to detect.
That's correct.
Right? So just the actual word password isn't enough.
That's correct. Another point that you have to think about with usernames and passwords is that through various studies, the same kind of password that you use for your system at work, or if there's a four-digit PIN number that you use at work, is quite often mapped to your ATM card or your garage door opener.
Right.
So given the level of sophistication and the analysis that is really at the forefront of today's cybersecurity teams, is that they found that almost 60% of the people reuse the same areas, and they can capture everything from your garage door password to your ATM account and get into your corporate account at the same time.
Well, only if they know that 1234 is mine.
And default passwords that come from the manufacturers are one of the key areas that people fail to change on their routers or their internet connection, and it gives a hacker clear visibility to their information systems.
Do you get the feeling that we have more IQ points in this room today than we have ever had on a show? This, to me, is a fascinating conversation. Just last night and a little bit this morning, I was on my computer doing some banking stuff. And that's really scary. Someone with just, you know, a few more IQ points than me, and that's a pretty good segment of the population, could get in there and see whatever they wanted to, can't they?
Well, yes.
If they're not working with you.
Well, most definitely the cybersecurity breaches can occur at a number of different levels. But what's happening is that through teleworking, and now that we just have such a grandiose amount of mobility now of being able to compute from your mobile phones, and the security is that no longer is a firewall or a perimeter an appropriate level of defense. It goes down to what's known as the application level, which means that at the very program that someone writes, if there's a security flaw in that application, it can cause an entire corporation's infrastructure to be breached.
So like if I'm working at Starbucks or something, somebody can just be sitting next to me, getting onto my computer, and therefore getting onto my company's computer?
Yes, it's called sidejacking and clickjacking. It's a very common occurrence.
common occurrence.
Very common. And what happens is that when someone breaks into your house, you usually know. But when someone breaks into your corporate computer, you usually won't know.
Now, are you typically called in after things blow up and things are really ugly, or are more and more organizations getting
like
smarter
proactive,
and bringing you in
right.
ahead of time?
Well, thank goodness that we're getting called in the front end from doing security assessments and risk assessments. The way that I commonly look at the environment is that when we're not putting out fires, we're installing smoke detectors.
Uh-huh.
And what we do is we do look at the kinds of customers who have the high level of requirement. But nowadays, the corporate responsibility to maintain shareholder wealth and to avoid risk is one of the areas that people really need to start paying attention in being proactive and looking at how they can secure their incident before the event happens.
Is there anything I could do right now to check that if I have a problem? Is there any, like, tip you can give us?
Well, the first thing...
Besides call you?
Well, we would definitely like for everyone to call us, but I think that one of the areas that is important is currently to start looking at different forms of uses of smart cards. Smart cards provide a mechanism so that only you know what your PIN number is, and don't make it the same PIN number as your ATM card, but utilize a mechanism so that you can uniquely assert your identity for performing different kinds of transactions, and to go to multi-factor where you're using your fingerprint, your iris, or other forms of technology, not only for access to your computer system, but for your physical infrastructure such as your home and your business as well.
So what award did you win other than the Scare the Hell Out of Everybody award, which you've certainly done for me?
Well, we won the Technology Innovation Award. Secure Experts has developed a video surveillance product that's currently in piloting with the Department of Homeland Security. So the unique characteristic about this technology is that it's what's known as a strong encryption solution. But what it does is it enables us to utilize video surveillance cameras to a mechanism so that the hackers cannot get into live video feeds and to intercept one of the most critical elements of data, which is video.
Mm-hmm.
And given the kinds of technology that Visitech and OFS deploys, this kind of bandwidth enables live streaming video to operate across networks with these gigabit speeds to being able to provide real-time surveillance. And currently, the kinds of cameras that are deployed in airports and other high-risk locations, they're known as CCTV for closed circuit. Our technology enables them to be broadcast over the public internet without fear of interception and security. So what that means is that as corporate and municipal police budgets, they cannot respond to your home if you have a burglar alarm or an alarm goes off at your house because they don't have the resources. We can actually enable Department of Homeland Security and local law enforcement to actually view these live video from their locations or from police cars or from other multimodal technologies so that they will be able to, number one, have a greater level of assessment, but it opens cameras and video security to the public or only to those people that need to be authorized explicit permissions for that video.
Wow.
It's a whole new world.
Yes.
Hacking is a team sport.
And I know.
All the stuff you're seeing on TV that you think is
all
fiction.
All the movie stuff, right?
This is like real. I guess like they got their idea from hanging out with these guys.
Well, one of the scariest pieces about the technology is that now it's been identified that FBI forensic experts cannot tell the difference between a Photoshop video or a live video. So what that means is that without these kinds of technologies that can determine the proof that this is a real camera, that it was located at such and such a location, then the mere area of being able to say that a video surveillance camera is admissible in the court of law
right, that's out the
is
window.
A challenge.
Right.
That's right.
Because
you can say, that wasn't me. Look, here's proof. I was over here.
And
they'll be like, you could have made that up in your home computer.
Yes, and there was an incident that happened earlier this year where a hacker was able to breach a police car and manipulate the images that were stored on the digital video recorders. and to literally manipulate the camera, and it broke what they call the chain of custody.
Right.
So without the chain of custody and the new capabilities to provide security,
then everything's inadmissible from that point forward, right?
That's right. So the game changer that we have is that we've been able to develop the technology that will assert chain of custody, digital time stamping, and enable the federal government to have monitoring that is accurate and it has provability, because you can prove that the video is authentic and it hasn't been tampered with or photoshopped.
Because in movies now, you know how they always have that scene where they change the video to make it look like it's a static scene while they're going back and forth and doing whatever they're doing?
Absolutely. And currently, when you start talking about agencies such as the airport, if you take a look at Hartsfield Airport, for example, they have three different cameras that are sitting side by side. One's the airport camera, one's the Homeland Security camera, and the other is their local security camera. Well, now the reduction in cost is that you only need one camera, and you can trust that camera feed amongst the other agencies. And you can also store the video in the cloud, which means that you don't need the digital video recorders and the network video recorders. So we're actually able to deploy a solution that costs up to 40% less to utilize our
solution. And it's better. And it's a better solution.
And it's definitely secure.
Right.
I'm dizzy. We gotta have this guy back sometime. All of them. We gotta have him back. We gotta have some smart people doing the hosting.
We need it.
No, this is a fascinating conversation. I really wish you would come back sometime, and maybe depending on the level of cleared for weird and security associated with it, maybe come back with a delighted client.
Well, I think one of the things we should do is we should put a camera up in here
so that as
you
like that.
Are showing your video host if people want to dial in over the internet.
You can
allow them to dial in, and then they could get to see everyone smiling pretty faces.
Oh, that'd be fun. Well, it's been an absolute delight having you on the show. Before we let you go, let's do make sure that people know how to reach out and get in touch with you guys.
Certainly. The name of the company is called Secure Experts, and it's just as it's spelled, secure and then experts, but there's a catch. In the middle, there's only one E. So everyone wants to know how it's spelled. So it's Secure Experts with only one E in the middle. And if you wanted to reach out to me personally, my email address is dwashington@secureexperts.com.
All right. What a terrific show.
Yeah, that was great.
Fast pace and a little bit above our pay grade, but I think it'll be fun to go back and listen to it.
I don't think they noticed that we weren't that smart.
You guys did a great job today. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor. Our guests this morning, E. Soon, Robert Lingle, Brigadier General Stuart Roadheaver, and Darnell Washington, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.